Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, 95.1 FM. And, of course, almost 50 years old now, 1080 AM radio. A lot of fun being planned for the radio station's 50th anniversary and the new 95.1 FM. Well, it's a miserable day. Well, I shouldn't say miserable. It's overcast and a little bit of rain here, a little bit of rain there. After a horribly hot weekend, it was just almost unmanageable. On Friday night, we went to Faribault, and when I got home, I'll tell you what, jumping in the shower was so great. The clothes I was wearing were soaked all the way through. Just a miserable hot day, but you know what? A lot better than a blizzard, I think. Today is the 19th day of June, and the year is 2018, and my guest this morning is Bill Waldschmidt, and he is a gentleman that I'm going to enjoy chit-chatting with. And Walt, if you can pull that microphone right up to your mouth like I'm doing here, we'll be able to get you better there, all right? Hello there, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, I want to know all about you. This is what the show is all about and what you do, et cetera. And you're a graduate from 1966?
Yeah, 1966 from Algona Garrigan High School, Algona, Iowa.
Algona. Why do I know Algona? That name is so familiar. Is it on the freeway when you go through?
No, it's on Highway 18 about 50 miles straight west of Mason City.
Okay. Well, I know that name, and I know the music from 1966 was pretty good, and I imagine you were a kid listening to radio like most of the teenagers back in the 60s. So as bumper music, I am going to play some of the selections, see if you remember them, and that'll be coming up after we take a break or two. But before we take a break or two, we're going to, you know, chronicle your life. But first, I'd like to get people to know whom I'm speaking of. And if you graduated in 1966, you got to be about 70 years old.
Yeah, just 70 and a half, yeah.
70 and a half, all right. How did that feel, hitting 70?
70 was no big deal, you know. It was, you know, you're already old by then, so
yeah.
Things are good.
So, how about when you hit 70? Did you think to yourself, "Well, we got another 20 years to go here, based on the statistics"?
Yes, my family has a bunch of long livers. So
long livers,
long livers, and short gallbladders.
Okay, all right, that sounds cool. And so, is that where you were born?
I was born in Fort Dodge, Iowa. We had a farm over by Whittemore, Iowa, where I was born and raised. And I was born in Pocahontas, but we moved to Whittemore, and my dad had a dairy farm there. So.
Oh, okay. How many siblings do you have?
There is eight or nine kids altogether. I have four brothers and four sisters.
Okay, this is the fun part for me, all right? And let's do it in chronological order. Who's the oldest?
Pat.
Okay, and how much older is he than you?
She's about 9 years older than me.
Okay, and then after Pat?
Joan.
Okay, and how much older is she than you?
She's about seven.
Okay, and after Joan?
Then came Rita.
Rita?
Rita.
How do you spell Rita?
R-I-T-A.
All right. Rita.
Oh, Rita.
Yeah, okay. How much older is she than you?
Well, I guess she would be about 3 or 4 years older than me.
Okay, we'll make it three just for the fun of it. And after Rita?
And then comes John.
Okay.
John is 2 years older than me.
Okay.
And then it was me, and then it was my brother Bob.
Okay. How much younger is Bob?
Bob is 3 years younger than me.
Okay.
And then David, who was 5 years younger than me.
Okay.
Tom, who would be 7 years younger than me. And then Virginia, who's about 9 years younger than me.
Wow. That is a family. And you said about 9 years younger.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're right in the middle.
Yes, I was the middle child, so.
Did that depress you like they do nowadays? They say a middle child suffers various things because the older is so revered, and then the little ones get all the attention.
But no,
not back on the dairy farm.
No, it was very good. Actually, my mom had all our graduation pictures in a pyramid on the wall in the living room of the old farmhouse. Of course, mine was at the top, so I convinced them all that Mom liked me best.
Yes, I can imagine it. That's good. How many acres did you have back there?
We had about 340 acres.
And how many dairy cattle?
About 35 milk cows, and then we had feeder cattle and hogs and chickens and some sheep. So,
Do you remember the movies Ma and Pa Perkins?
Yeah.
I imagine it wasn't like that, but it was kind of like that.
A little different. We were a pretty good farming. I think we had like 3 tractors, and Dad kept all of us boys busy.
There was
being 5 boys in a row, we could find something to do most of the time, you know. So.
And when you were doing the milking, were you using De Laval or Surge?
Well, we milked cows by hand for many years, and then we got a Surge milker in the last year. So.
By hand, okay. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, Dad would milk 4 cows, 4 or 5 cows, and I'd milk 4, and so we did that every morning and evening, before and after school.
Yeah, and did you sell the milk then and use it, of course, for your own use? And, did you have a cooling system back then?
We had a tank that the milk cans, we were always in the cans. We didn't have the bulk system, but the cans would go into a cooler, and the milk truck would come, I think, every day or every other day.
And of course, you had to haul those big cans.
Yeah, they were 10-gallon cans.
Oh, my gosh, that's heavy.
Yeah, they were heavy.
Yeah. Now, what was the weather like in that part of Iowa? And you say it was 50 miles west of Mason City?
Right. Our farm was almost 100 miles straight south of Mankato.
Okay.
The weather was a lot like it is here.
Okay.
It seemed like we had a lot more snow in the wintertime, but it was always hot and humid, with a lot of the corn growing around, helping put humidity in the air. You know, so.
Well, what we'll do is we'll just go through your lifetime, but what are you up to now? What are you doing? I notice you're wearing a Minnesota Gophers sweatshirt. Looks nice.
Yeah, well, my daughter works for the university, so got to support her. You know.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe it was a Father's Day gift or something.
I think it was a Christmas gift, actually.
Okay. Yeah. So what do you do at age 70 right now?
Well, I volunteer mostly. I been involved with a lot of different things. One of my biggest thing I do right now is I collect and I restore power wheelchairs, and then they're donated to disabled veterans of Minnesota, or any person that's really needy, that needs a wheelchair, we'll make sure that they get one.
Wow. And I notice you're not in a wheelchair right now, but you came in a wheelchair. And is that one that you salvaged or bought new, or how does it work?
Actually, this chair was, I was in the hospital having some shoulder surgery, and my son, Daniel, he heard this one being advertised on the radio, and he called me up, and I looked at it online, and him and my son-in-law, they went down and picked it up, and I restored it, and I've been using it for 3 years or so now.
Now, those arms on that chair, are those original?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. Those are made out of black walnut.
Yeah, they're beautiful wood.
The ones that come with them, they break quite easily, and they only last about a year, and they're very expensive. So.
Now, this is a chair that's electric.
Yes.
And you have a wand or a joystick or whatever you call it, and it goes forwards, backwards, and in circles?
Yeah, spins around, does everything that I need it to do, yes.
How about lifting?
Actually, this chair will come up about 8-9 inches high.
Okay. Will it tilt?
No.
Okay. No. Are there wheelchairs that You can bring it up to eye level when you're in a room talking to people, and maybe go up and down steps, and maybe be able to tilt so you can get out of it easier and into it easier.
Yes, they do have all kinds of chairs now that raise up and down, do everything. They can have your legs go up and down individually or lay out almost flat on them. Some of those chairs are around $50,000.
That's where I was going next. Yeah. So only the very wealthy can afford those? Or?
Well, yeah, or if the insurance will pay for it, they will get them. When I got my first chair, they said that they would only buy the first chair, which was probably about an $8,000 chair back then, about 8-9 years ago. It did not raise up or do anything special, but it was a good chair.
Electric
chair, yeah.
Okay.
Because of my muscles, I had polio when I was 4 years old.
Wow.
And now I have what they call post polio. They do not want me to use in my arms and muscles any more than I have to. Because instead of building it up, it just tears it down. So I've been into a power wheelchair now for about 8-9 years.
So you were born in 1948?
Yes.
Okay. And now I'm older than you, but I do remember standing in line for the Salk vaccine, and it seems to me that that might have been right around 1955 or 6.
55. They came out with the vaccine in 53, but in 55 they started doing mass inoculations.
Yeah. With them. So where were you when that was going on?
I was on the farm down in just west of Algona.
Yeah.
Two of my siblings had polio as well.
Really? The older ones?
The oldest one, Pat.
Uh-huh.
She had it about 7 years before I did. And then Joan and I had it at the same time. Now, neither one of them had it very, very hard hit or nothing, so they're both doing quite well.
Yeah. Well, as a youngster, I remember a couple of kids in the neighborhood that had polio, and to get around, it was really difficult back then. Some actually had the lower extremities on a cart and then would use their gloved hands to roll and get places. But how do you explain that your older sisters and you had polio? Did anyone ever come up with a...
You know, not that I know of. We lived on the farm with a lot of animals, but my mother was a very clean person, and everything was always really good shape. You know, my mom and dad took very good care of us. But so I don't know why or how we were able to contact it, but in 52 it was quite rampant then throughout the country. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very contagious.
And what affliction did you, was a result of your being struck by polio?
So I mostly had it from my waist on down.
Uh-huh.
At that time. And my right leg was the worst. It's never been of use to me. And my left leg is quite short as well.
Short, did you say?
Yes, yeah.
Well, how do you mean short?
Well, it's probably 3 or 4 inches shorter than it should be.
After you were born?
No, before, after I had the polio. I didn't grow from the waist down for about 3 years. So.
Okay, so you were born in 1948.
Yep.
And until 51?
52, yeah.
52, you had no use from the lower...
Oh, no, I was really good up to 52.
Okay.
After the polio got me. Yeah.
Okay, now how about your sisters?
They're both quite short, but they both really don't have any effects from it at this time in their life.
So. Okay, what do you mean when you say they're short?
They're maybe 5'3".
Oh,
5'2",
just like
5'1".
You would describe somebody. Yeah, he's
yeah.
A tall. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you had been affected, they were affected also at the same time?
Well, Joan was. Pat was before us. But, okay. Yeah, Joan and I both went to the hospital at the same time.
Okay, now did Pat, did she outgrow it, or how did that work?
Well, she come through it quite well. I mean, you know, you're pretty sick there for quite a while, but then she battled her way through it and come out and has led a very productive life. And
well, a lot of people are probably thinking, well, if you had three children and all of them were afflicted by polio, why would you continue having children if it was genetic?
Well, it's not genetic.
Okay, I'm gonna. Yeah. That's where I'm going with
oh,
this.
Oh no, it's not genetic. It was it's a virus that attacks your nerve system, which stops your muscles from firing, and it just kind of stunts everything back.
Is it painful?
So right now I have what they call post polio, which is quite painful at times. You can be doing really well, and within 30 seconds you can be in a lot of pain.
In the legs or?
Anywhere in the body now. So.
Does polio affect the upper portion of the body? Because most of them, I think of, are legs.
Yes, you think about it in the legs. Some people, it was in their lungs. They were in iron lungs at the time.
Oh, I remember those. The March of Dimes.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Remember those placards you'd put a dime in the little slot at the checkout counter?
Yep.
And it was called the March of Dimes. It was very, very effective.
So my dad and mom were recipients, or I was, I guess, of the March of Dimes. They helped pay for my braces as I was growing up.
Well, how could, it's 9:19 on the Wayne Eddy Affair this Tuesday morning in June, and I'm talking to a gentleman by the name of Bill Waldschmidt, and he restores electric and also other wheelchairs?
Just power chairs.
Power chairs.
Yep.
All right. He is afflicted with a polio, and he's in the middle of a whole bunch of children, and we're talking about what it was like. Now, I can remember, it's so vivid, the house that was down the street, this is back in the 40s, and there was a kid that had polio, and we were playing in a room somewhere, and all of a sudden, you could smell something, and it was really kind of different, and an adult came in the room and said, "Rodney," and pulled him off the register. He had his legs were over the register, and so the heat coming up was cooking his legs. That was my first experience. Probably I was 7 years old at the most. And so do you lose feeling in your legs when you're afflicted with polio?
So a lot of people are different. I have full feeling in both legs and my feet. But I belong to a group of people that all have post polio, and we get together once a month. I don't make it as often as I'd like to. But we do talk about the things that are bothering us and what works for us. And everybody is so different. They all have the pain that comes in from, you know, periodic at times. But some are walking and doing quite well, and others are really struggling and living in a chair, not able to even transfer like I did from the chair.
Yeah, you surprised me. Yeah. You came in the studio before I did, and I saw you. Where's your wheelchair? Okay, but where do you live now?
I live between Northfield and Randolph. I live out on the Cannon River Boulevard Road, on a gravel road out in the country, where we have a house that we have a ramp on all one level, so it works quite well for the wheelchair. And then I have a big shop out there where, instead of restoring classic cars now, I'm working on wheelchairs. But I'm still looking for a car, always looking for a car to make into a wheelchair-accessible hot rod.
Oh, okay. I have a 75 model Oldsmobile, and somehow somebody scraped it and the tail light broke. And so this guy that I talked to, who's a body shop guy, called me up and says, Wayne, what do you think they want for your tail light? I said, I don't know, about $100. He said, $625. What? That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, what does the guy do? You know, did you make them?
Well, you make a lot of the parts. A year ago, I guess maybe going on 2 years now, I had a 64 Malibu SS convertible, and I sold that along with a 29 Model A pickup, which hadn't been restored hardly at all, anything on it. But the people that bought them from me are actually friends of mine, and they are restoring them. And the Chevelle was all restored, though, but it was... It's really fun. I love classic cars.
Well, 66, that's the year you graduated from high school. So that's kind of like, was that kind of like a favorite car for you?
In 1964, when they came out, I was a sophomore in high school, and I told myself I was going to have me one of those cars. So it took me a long time to get one, you know. But
Now, where you live out between, how long have you been living out there in that area?
It'll be 17 years now.
Oh. So. Do you know a young boy, a young man named Brian that has a double amputee?
I don't.
Randolph?
I don't know. No, I don't know him.
Okay. Did you know 17 years? Would you have known Bernie Hughes?
No, that doesn't ring a bell either.
Okay. How about there's the Ottos?
Yeah, there's a lot of Ottos out there. I have some very good neighbors out there that help me out anytime that I need something. You know, they're always over there doing stuff for me, and I plow snow for them, and it's really a great place to live.
A friend of mine named Larry lives out in that area. And I'm not going to come up with his last name. Do you go to the Randolph Fire Department chicken feed?
Always. That's the best one around, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So let's get into your life and where you were born, what mom and dad were like, what grandma and grandpa were like, and the name Waldschmidt, and that sounds German.
Yeah, in German it means woodcutter.
Hey, perfect. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back here on KYMN Radio. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair. Bill Waldschmidt from Randolph is my guest this morning.
Take a short drive to Delicious to the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison. The Fireside is just a short 10-minute drive from Northfield. Wednesday is Rib and Wing Wednesday. Choose 6 or 12 of Fireside's jumbo wings and your choice of sauces. Plus, beginning at 4 p.m., you can enjoy the Fireside's fall-off-the-bone barbecue ribs, served with your choice of potato and sides at a special Wednesday price. The Fireside now opens at 11 a.m. Wednesday through Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. for breakfast. Take this short drive to Delicious and enjoy ribs and wings today at the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
This is David Ludischer of Grundhoffer & Ludischer, Attorneys at Law. Marv and I, and the best legal staff anywhere, are pleased to introduce you to the newest members of our legal team, Jennifer Novak. Jennifer grew up in Lonsdale. She was previously a law clerk to several judges and has years of experience in social work. Jennifer joins Marv, me, and Robin Finke. Robin joined us last year. Robin has over two decades of experience, much of it as a trial attorney. And for the curious, yes, Marv still comes in every day.
Well, at 9:27 on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is Bill Waldschmidt. And Bill, on radio, you've heard what we refer to as bumper music. That's music that you play after a commercial. People know you're going to be back on the air. And you graduated in 1966, and I want to know if you remember the number 10 song of all of 1966. This song was number 10. I think you'll know this song the minute I go like this. Can you name it?
Wild Thing.
Yeah. I remember. remember dancing to this over when I was working in Wisconsin. And what a blast. I'll bet you can't name who did it.
I can't, no.
The Trogs.
Wild thing, I think I love you. But I want to know for sure.
Do you ever do karaoke?
Not too much, no. I'm not much of a singer.
Well, I was going to say that'd be kind of a fun one to do. Wild thing. All right, let's get back to our conversation here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. And, Bill, we're going to talk about born in Iowa, and you're one of how many kids?
Nine kids.
Pat, Jean, Rita, John, Bob, David, Tom, and Virginia.
Virginia. Actually, yeah. The second one is Joan.
Oh. Joan? What did I say?
Gene, I think.
Oh, okay. I can't even read my own writing. So I'd like to learn, especially on a farm. Was this a family farm that started with the Waldschmidts or your mom? Or
my mom and dad, they rented the farm. So back then they got half the money and the man that owned the farm got half the money, and but we had a really good life. I mean, we didn't have a lot of money, but to feed nine kids and always plenty to eat and a steak when mom and dad wanted it.
So. And did your dad ever complain about having to give half of the money to the owner of the land?
I don't ever recall. Mom and dad never talked around us about business stuff like that.
So. Does that seem fair when you think about it now?
Oh, I think it is, yeah.
Okay, half the profit or half the net? Don't know all that.
Don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so your mom and dad get married, and they go to this guy, and they rent 300 acres from him and start having children.
Well, they started farming down by Pocahontas, Iowa, and then they already knew this gentleman down there, and they were renting down there as well. Then they moved up to Iowa and or up to by Whittemore, the Algona area, and then they started this bigger farm up there, which was a very good farm, very good soil.
Did it have any history to it, like?
No real history to it. I think the gentleman that they were rented from was an Elbert, and my grandmother was an Elbert, and that was a well-known name around there. And,
okay.
So I think we were, related at some point to him.
Okay, well, let's talk about Grandma and Grandpa. Might as well start with your mom's side. Did they live nearby, your grandparents?
Yeah, Grandpa and Grandma Lichtai, they lived over by Wesley, Iowa, which was east of Algona, about 10, 15 miles. They were farmers at the time and grew up over there. And my Grandpa and Grandma Waldschmidt, which was my dad's side, they lived around Algona, down by Fort Dodge, various places. They moved a few times, so.
So what did you, for example, do at Christmas time?
Well, at Christmas time, what the Christmases I remember, we would all be together at our house, and everybody would be there, and it was like growing up as a kid, you could never wait till Christmas got there, and Dad had hid some race car set, a little slot car set, out there in the granary. Of course, us boys found it. We set it up, and we had played with it several times before Christmas, when Mom and Dad would be gone. But my brother-in-law ratted us out because when we opened it up at Christmas time, we had that thing together and running in a matter of a couple of minutes. And he says, "Elliot, I think they've played with this thing before."
Wow. That's cool. Did you have a lot of aunts and uncles?
We did. I don't recall ever getting together with them at Christmas time, but we had a lot of aunts and uncles that we got together with on a regular basis. They had kids our age and stuff, so we we had a lot of good memories together growing up and being around on the farms.
When's the last time that you and Pat and Jean, is it?
Joan,
okay. And Rita and John and Bob and David and Tom and Virginia. When's the last time all of you were together at the same time, maybe taking pictures?
Well, at Christmas time, we get together at a hotel down by Albert Lea, the whole family and everybody that can come, and we reserve a big block of rooms in the room for the party, the gathering, and we all get together every year, and a lot of times we may have a camp out or two sometimes during the summer, and we get together quite frequently, so it's been very good.
And is Mom and Dad still living?
No, Mom passed away about 3 years ago at the age of 97, and my dad, he died at about 1985, so they've been gone for a while now, but as kids we still all get together.
And why did you choose Albert Lea as a gathering spot?
Well, some of the family is from Iowa, and the rest of us live up in Minnesota, so it's kind of central gathering area.
Okay. And then where you stay, they provide swimming for the kids? Well, I suppose you have some nieces and nephews that are probably grown up already, huh?
Yeah, some of them come from quite a ways, you know, maybe as far away as Washington, D.C. or Texas down there, and different, you know, areas. Some of the nephews, nieces live in Kansas City area. So, but they all, everybody comes up that can make it, so it's really a good gathering.
Oh, it's got to be fun. Yeah. Now, I noticed you took your sweatshirt off. Now you got your T-shirt, Bass Pro Shops. Are you a fisher person?
I love to fish. I love going ice fishing. I like to hunt, deer hunt yet. I use a crossbow, and I love being outside and doing things like that.
Now, how can you... what are you using a crossbow on? A deer?
Deer, yeah.
So you have a stand somewhere?
No, I have a Polaris Ranger, and I have it set up in, so I can drop down camouflage curtains and netting around it, and I just slide over to the passenger seat, and I can shoot right out to the window, a special door and things that I've made in it. I've never shot one from it, but that would be the theory.
Well, how do you so that's how you get out into the woods is with the Polaris.
Yes.
Yeah, you transfer from the wheelchair to the Polaris.
Right.
And are you ever out there alone?
Oh, yeah. I go out. Like around here, I'll hunt by myself. My son-in-law has some land up north up by Detroit Lakes, and we go up there. Most of the time it's just a two of us, sometimes a third one. And we bow hunt on his hunting land typically the week before the gun opener starts, and then all the gun hunters, his friends, come up, and they're much younger than me, so it's time for me to go back to the cities.
You know. Have you been successful with the bow?
I have not shot one with a bow, no.
Okay. Is that a thing in life, like one of your bucket lists?
Well, I'd love to shoot a big buck with my bow, yeah. I think that would be fun.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them running around in my neighborhood, and wild turkey, and... somebody said they saw a cougar footprint.
Wow.
So, but nobody's missing any cats or dogs. So, 25 minutes before 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is a fellow by the name of Bill Waldschmidt, and he's from the Randolph area, and he's in the wheelchair fixing business, and we'll talk a lot about that as we move along. So when you live on the farmhouse, and then when school started, and you contracted polio at
the age of four.
4 years old. So just before, a couple of years before you're going to head off to school, what happened?
Well, by the time I was going into first grade, we never had kindergarten back then. I was walking on crutches and with brace on the leg and stuff. So that's just the way I was. I mean, I grew up walking like that.
Yeah. So you were a poster child. Do you remember the March of Dimes?
Yeah.
They had that kid on those crutches. What kind did you use?
Just the wooden sticks.
Okay. You know. Yeah. Okay, so when you got into school, you're on crutches, and then those braces on your legs?
One brace on my right leg, yeah.
Okay. And that was to what? What did the brace
it
help you do?
It would help you walk or run. You know, I tried to run with the crutches to keep up. I played ball with the rest of the boys, did everything that anybody else would do as well, you know.
What type of a school was it for your elementary education?
I went to a Catholic grade school in Whittemore. And then as we got into high school, that was a Catholic school in Algona, Iowa, Algona-Garrigan.
Okay, so you had nuns?
We had nuns, yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, do you remember what kind they were?
Presentation.
All right. Yeah. And did they ever use the ruler on your hand?
As a matter of fact, they did.
They did, huh? I got the same thing. And you just took it, you know?
Yeah, you put your hands out there and took it like a man. Yeah.
I remember Sister Clarissa. Now, I had a lot of different nuns, but she's the one that I didn't like. And now I'm glad she was the way she was. She was doing the right thing once I got back from the moon. To the moon, you know, that one. Did you find, you know, today kids have all these smartphones, and bullying is a big deal nowadays. And I remember growing up, there were bullies, but when you were away from them and at home, you were cool, okay? But these kids today get bullied all day, and the phones are just connected to them. And they write the nasty notes and vulgarities and accusations and just say things that it's terrible. Yeah. Did you ever get bullied?
I was bullied by some when I was younger. I mean, some of the kids didn't think I should be playing King on the Mountain on the snow piles with the rest of them. But I was quite strong because of walking on crutches all the time, and after pounding a few guys a few times, the bullying kind of went away, and I had a very good friend of mine who's still like one of my best friends, and he would always stand up for me, and if anybody was bullying me, he would step in on it. And
what were some of the teasing things that you, the zingers that you remember?
Being called Crip, you know, they would make different, you know, names that they would come up with. I don't recall them at this time, but, you know, I was quite fortunate. I was strong enough to stand up for myself. If I could get my hands on them, that's all I needed to do.
Well, were there any of them that were hit and run?
Well, they tried.
Tripping with the crutches, huh?
Yeah. That crutch reaches out a long ways.
Yeah. So when you got into Catholic high school, what was the name of it?
Garrigan.
Garrigan?
Garrigan.
Garrigan.
G, yeah. Yeah.
The Catholic school was named Garrigan?
After Bishop Garrigan, yes.
Okay, that's where it comes from. Did you get involved in activities in high school? Oh, by the way, before we do that, what happened then with Pat and Joan?
They both came through very well. Pat has a slight twinge when she smiles a little bit, but they are both very good. You would never know it.
Had they been on crutches?
No, they never had any big effect from it. They just had a slight case and got over it right away, and they were good.
Oh, so you're the only one.
I was the only one that had, you know, lingering effects from it.
And if you've just tuned in, folks, my guest this morning didn't get that polio vaccine early enough, and was inflicted with polio, and is in a wheelchair right now, and he's got a very interesting side business. We'll be talking about that too. So what activities could you participate in high school?
I was like the manager for the football team, you know, helping in there with whatever it took to do, you know.
Laundry.
Yep. Laundry, yep. Getting the helmets out and pads, stuff, yeah.
I was wondering, could did they have a wrestling program?
No, there's no wrestling at the time.
Do you wish they would have had?
Yes, I do. My son was a wrestler, and I just love watching it. One of my younger brothers went to a different school, and he was a wrestler. Very good. You know, so.
Well, you would have been very good because your upper body strength would have been pretty well worked out, you know, on those crutches.
Yeah, I always enjoyed doing that kind of stuff.
I remember when I was about 63 years old, I went to a family picnic, and I hadn't gotten a prosthesis yet, and so I was on crutches. And I'll never forget, I kind of arranged things. I had a speaker system so the cousins could have their kids come up and say this in my companion, you know, introduce, because you kind of lose track of who's who.
Right.
And some families have different color T-shirts, and I think that's kind of a cool idea. But anyhow, I was using the system that I had connected to my car, and I'll never forget one of my cousins came up. I was a girl cousin my age, and she said, "Wayne, you really look buff." And I thought that was pretty cool because it was summertime. I was tan and using those crutches. So there's a side benefit.
Yeah, they do build up your upper arms and stuff. So, yeah.
It's 17 minutes before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. We're going to take another brief break, and we're going to come back and find out more about Bill Waldschmidt right after this important timeout on KYMN Northfield.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
The Army National Guard is committed to keeping the country safe and our community secure. Composed of hundreds of thousands of citizen soldiers from all walks of life, the Guard is always ready to respond to local or national emergencies. We protect the homeland. We're always there when called upon, and in every state and territory, we stand guard for our communities. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Name this tune.
Home in the City.
Yep. But you can't name who sang it.
I'm not good at remembering the names.
Yeah. This song was number 7 in all of 1966. Summer in the City, as performed by.
Girl, come on, come on, and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be all right. And babe, don't you know
the Lovin' Spoonful. Yeah. So we're back in high school with you down in Iowa, and you are you helped the football team. You're a manager of the football team. Did you get involved in anything else in high school, like theater or music? Or
I sang in the choir. Of course, then I did things for phys ed, too. I could climb the rope up and ring the bell faster than anybody else without having to use my legs, but...
So in high school, you had total respect, no more bullying or anything like that?
Well, as long as I had my buddy Dave around, I was never okay. Bullied, no.
So you're working on the farm, you're milking twice a day. Did you have a television set when you were a kid?
I can remember when we got a black and white TV, and there was 3 channels, only one or two came in very good, and when Dad wanted the channel changed, he had to holler at one of us boys to do it, because... That was we were the remotes back then.
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Did you have any thoughts while you were going through high school about what you wanted to do with your life? If you graduated in 66, obviously you wouldn't have been drafted. And the class of 66 sent a lot of people to Nam. What was your thinking, that you'd help Dad on the farm, eventually buy it? And
well, I thought at one time that I would help on the farm, but Dad and the the banker in town did not think that I would be sticking with the farm. I had a kind of a wild streak in me a little bit. And
Wild Thing was a good song to play.
Yeah, it was a good song. I was went to refrigeration training school down in Omaha, Nebraska, and became a refrigeration technician.
So how was you obviously were ambulatory. Did you have to use crutches?
Well, at that time, I was walking with just a brace.
Okay.
And I wasn't using a cane or anything. And I was quite strong, and I could wheel a refrigerator on a dolly if I had to, or carry refrigerant bottles, you know.
Did you walk with a significant limp?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
A sideways limp?
Right, because my right leg was about 3 inches shorter than my left one, even though that was short.
So. Did swimming, was that a good thing for you?
I did a lot of swimming. My folks would drive me after I got home from the hospital. They would take me to Fort Dodge, Iowa, where they had an indoor swimming pool. And we were down there daily for like a year, where my mom or dad would drive me back and forth. It was like 50 or 60 miles each way.
Wow.
So we did a lot of swimming back in those days.
That was good for the leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember, did you get a first bicycle?
I remember getting a first bicycle, yeah, a Hiawatha. You know, had the little tassels on it. Well, I had to share it with my four brothers.
But yeah. did you kind of pull rank, though, because you were older?
Well, my brother John was the oldest of the boys, but, we always pulled rank or tried to fight, you know, for different ones, you know.
So how'd they go at the refrigeration school?
Very well. I got me a job in Fort Dodge working on mechanical refrigerated boxcars and reefer trailers, which ended up bringing me up to the cities to go to school at a company called Thermo King.
Oh, I had a vice president of Thermo King on the air.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably know him because I was there for 46 years.
It's a her.
Oh, her.
Sherry is her first name.
Oh, yes.
You know who I mean?
Yeah, I know who
Real
you mean.
Real tall, good-looking woman?
Yeah, blonde girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I worked there for 46 years. And
what?
Worked my way up to become a senior engineer.
Thermo King?
Yeah.
46 years?
46 years.
Holy moly. Yeah. How old were you when you started?
About 20.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you went away from the farm and went to refrigeration school and ended up at one place. And then how did you find the job at Thermo King?
Well, I came up to go to school, and at the time I was working for a carrier, a Transco, which was a competitor at the time, and they threw me out the door, but I was persistent at coming back in wanting to learn about Thermo Kings. And so I had to take the tests, and they made me a job offer to work in their prototype shop to build prototype equipment, which I did for about 12 years. And then as my medical issues became more prevalent, I moved into the office. And at one time I was going to quit, go back to school and get my degree so I could become an engineer. And they gave me the engineering title and the pay to go with it if I would just stay and keep doing what I do, which was designing refrigeration equipment and stuff. I have 17 patents and still have 4 more coming through yet. So it was something that I just kind of took to, you know.
Well, no. When you say I had 17 patents, are you talking about 4 Thermo King?
For Thermo King, yes.
Yeah. How do you feel about that when you come up with something like that and then the corporate people own you and your idea because they're paying you to do that? Do you ever say, I think I'll do this one on the side by myself, or are there rules not to do that?
Well, you could, and I had worked on some on the side like that too, but they are very expensive to get, and it takes a lot of time to get. I mean, it can take 7 or 8 years sometimes for a patent to go through. Other ones go through very quickly if they're already into production and the company really wants to hang on to that idea. Being in thermodynamics was one thing, but my last two patents actually were on diesel emissions. So.
Oh, cool. Sherry Johnson.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't it funny how I don't know you, never met you before, and now we got a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a lovely place over on the river in St. Paul or Mendota Heights, whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, and she's a great lady.
Yeah, she retired and he retired, yep. And they're living in Luck, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not know they were in Luck. No.
Yep, they were in Luck. 46 years. And Thermo King's a good company. You know, the first time I ever heard of Thermo King was, and I had no idea what it was, what do you think it would have been? As a young man, the name Thermo King.
Probably something to do with thermos bottles.
No.
No. So my grandma, Till, I told her I was going to be working in engineering at Thermo King. She says, how much engineering work can there be into making long underwear?
Yeah. Oh, Thermo King, yeah. Well, race cars.
Oh, yeah.
They sponsored Indy cars.
Yes.
And I attended the Indy 500 for 35 years or whatever it is in a row. And Thermo King was from Minnesota.
Yeah.
I had no idea what they did. But anyhow, Sherry set me straight on that. She talked about how the drug smugglers would use the equipment that you people designed and made and be able to hide it somewhere. I don't know exactly where, but one of your jobs was to find a way to have a reefer. It's funny you call it a reefer, and they're smuggling reefers.
Yeah.
But... how to have the refrigeration without people finding a way to hide bulk drugs.
Well, some of it is because if they're hauling smoked meats, the smoked meat flavor that, you know, if you go into any locker plant and the Griggs Meats or one of those or over down in Denison, that smell kind of makes the dog so that they can't pick it up. And, I know of a guy that was hauling deli sausages to Florida in a van and then coming back empty, so to speak. So I think a lot of that stuff went on, you know, but my job was to make them work and come up with new ideas on how to make stuff work more efficiently.
I'm going to take a last break this hour, and I have a question. And how cold can you get with a, don't answer yet, but how cold can you get the semi-trailer to freeze? Or I don't know. We'll find out right after this important timeout.
This is raindrops falling in the outfield of Target Field. That is Byron Buxton ensuring nothing else does. As a shout-out to our outfielders and their impossible catches, the first 10,000 fans on June 22nd will get a Nothing Falls But Raindrops Buxton bobblehead presented by Pentair. Collect the Rosario bobblehead later to complete the set. Don't miss a warning track leap, sliding snag, or the second bobblehead in the series. That's how we defend our outfield. This is how we baseball. Visit twinsbaseball.com.
You never know who's going to show up on St. Paul's front porch. Tonight it's the Big Doll Gang. Isn't that adorable? Little Tommy is going to shoot off some bottle rockets. Bet he doesn't know they're illegal in Minnesota. Be careful, Tommy. Don't shoot your eye out.
Saints baseball, June 21st through 27th. Don't miss Thirsty Thursday, Family Sunday, or Metropolitan State University Minnesota Monday.
Fun is good at CHS Field, St. Paul's front porch, and home of Saints baseball.
Name this tune.
Monday, Monday.
Who sang it?
That's Mamas and the Papas.
Yep. You're doing good.
So good to me.
My guest this morning, class of 1966 down in Iowa, and that song, number 5 over the entire year of 1966, The Mamas and the Papas. How cold can you get a trailer to get? How cold can you to get?
Well, you can, most of them will run 25, minus 25, so you can do them up to like minus 30. There's ways of bringing it much colder, which you do for special customers, doing a waterfall system of different things, techniques. You could get down to minus 40, but that's typically not ever done in a semi, which has inch and a half to 2 inches of insulation in the walls. So.
Minus 25 degrees.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. And how long does it take to thaw it out? Or does it build up ice on the inside? Or?
No, they have automatic defrosting, so any frost that would get onto the evaporator coil will automatically be thawed out and run out through the drain so that it doesn't don't freeze up the coils.
So are there like special instructions, keep doors closed at all times or stuff like that?
If you can keep the door closed, you can keep the heat out. They'll maintain temperature a lot better. But then if you going down the street here in Northfield and you'll see a truck unloading and the door will be wide open in the back and he'll have his cart and he'll be in the store. So you got to fight that thing all the time.
So how big is a unit to make a semi-trailer 25 below zero?
These units are typically quite large. They have a four-cylinder diesel engine in them. They have four-cylinder and different types of technologies in the compressors. You know, they're about 40 horsepower. They'll take up the whole front end of a semi-trailer. So.
Okay, so when the guy's driving down the road, he's got two motors going, one driving the truck and the other one cooling the trailer.
Right, but when the trailer gets down to temperature, the motor, the engine that's running the refrigeration unit will shut off. And it will not come on until that trailer is calling for coolant, you know, cooling or heating.
Okay.
In the wintertime, you have to heat the produce so it doesn't freeze, too.
Oh, boy. So you actually became an inventor. You have your patents, four pending. And you got off the farm and went to refrigeration school. And is it a busy place or a lot of men? Any women that went to the refrigeration school in, where was it, Iowa?
In Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha, Nebraska, yeah.
There was no women in our class, no.
And how many were in your class?
Probably about 25 of us.
Okay, from around the country?
Yeah, from Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas.
Okay. Yeah. And so you learn all about the theory and then hands-on?
Yeah, you get the theory on how it works, and then they had equipment there for you to work on. The instructors would make things so that they wouldn't work. You'd come in the morning and have to fix them up. We'd run a service truck and repair stuff throughout the city for people. I remember one time being sent out to this lady's house, and it was kind of a setup deal that they did, but this older lady, she wanted her refrigerator serviced.
I'll tell you what. Save that story. We'll do the 10 o'clock news, and if we're capable, we'll try to remember what we're okay. thinking about here, okay? But I'm going to make you responsible. Some old lady, okay. We'll be right back on KYMN Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial, and 95.1, the 1 FM from Northfield.
Trade war, immigration debate. I'm John Trout. President Trump threatens new tariffs on Chinese imports. Correspondent Matt Rivers.
When the Trump administration made that first round of tariffs, $50 billion worth official on Friday, China came out and retaliated in kind. Then, as a result, the Trump administration said, well, we're going to look at potentially putting $200 billion more in tariffs in the next couple of months.
Trump said he'll follow through if Beijing retaliates against the previous round of U.S. tariffs. China's Commerce Ministry criticized the threat, saying it's an act of extreme pressure and blackmail. Allison Kosick is on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, where word of the potential of new tariffs have spooked Wall Street investors.
And at this point, it's rhetoric, but the rhetoric alone is really undermining confidence here in the stock market. And you really see it in some of the stock prices for some of the big American companies like Boeing and Caterpillar falling at the open as well. Intel taking a big hit as well.
The Dow is down over 330 points or 1.44%. The NASDAQ is off 60 points. President Trump is set to meet tonight with GOP House members to discuss immigration.
Overnight, the Trump administration defending its policy of separating families who've crossed into the U.S. illegally. On Fox News, Attorney General Jeff Sessions countering the audio recordings of children calling out for parents or relatives.
We're doing the right thing. We're taking care of these children. They are not being abused. The Health and Human Services holds them in good conditions. They work hard at it.
Host Laura Ingram compared the detention centers to day camps, as critics compare them to Japanese internment centers of World War II. President Trump will be here today to discuss the zero-tolerance policy behind the imagery with the Republican House Conference. Bob Costantini, Capitol Hill.
America's home builders are getting busier. Among other positive numbers, figures out today from the Commerce Department show housing starts are up 10.5% over the past year. I'm John Trout.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. A friend you can count on. In studio, I have my guest. His name is Bill Waldschmidt, and he is a guy that renovates motorized wheelchairs, and he has one himself with customized arms on it. But we were talking about your being educated in Nebraska and learning refrigeration. Did I ask you why? Why would you go to refrigeration school, being a farm kid?
Well, my mom was kind of looking around. She says, you know, this is going to be around forever. Everybody's always going to need this. You ought to learn this and study this. So I said, yeah, okay. Yeah,
okay. You know. And now we're going to tell a story. As a student, you would have your instructors would disable some refrigeration unit, and you'd have to come back the next day, and your assignment was fix this refrigerator, and you learned how to check things out and all that. So now you also were able to go out in the field, and people knew that you were students from this school, so they were going to probably get a better price. And so they sent you to this elderly, well, nowadays we don't like to say old lady because we're there.
Yeah.
We're all, okay, so the rest of the story.
Well, they sent me out there. I got to the door and the lady said, yeah, it's about time you get here. You know, I've been waiting for you for an hour, but we were there right on time. There was me and another guy. They always send us out in pairs. So we went to the refrigerator. I started checking it out, and I told her, I said, ma'am, there's nothing wrong with your refrigerator. And she says, well, don't tell me there's nothing wrong with it. That thing needs to be serviced. I get it serviced every year. You need to service that refrigerator. So I made sure the coils were all clean, the fans were all gone, and I told her again. I says, well, you're pretty well. She says, young man, finish it. You know, finish the job. You know, I don't want this thing making any noise. So I got an oil can on. I put a little oil on the springs underneath the compressor and wiped everything off when I was done. And then she was happy, and she got her bill from the school, and which was very little of anything, you know. But she was a happy customer. And the next day when I was out there, my instructor asked me, he says, so how did it go yesterday? And I said, well, we got it all fixed up, and the customer is very happy. He looked at me and said, well, did you oil the springs? I said, I sure did.
So she's been there, done that before.
Every year she had him called up and come service her refrigerator.
Well, what kind of a refrigerator was it?
Just a household refrigerator, like in any normal kitchen.
Now, when you went to a refrigeration school, Were you being trained to handle all types of refrigeration?
I was being able, you know, you'd fix freezers, refrigerators, rooftop, air conditioning on buildings, water chillers, stuff like that, yes.
And what was your thinking when you were a student on what you were going to do, and how old were you?
So at the time, I was about 18. I tried a couple other small jobs right after high school, but I found that I could not do competitive, repetitious work. I think I had 9 jobs in 3 different states the first time right out of high school, but that was not for me, and I wanted to go back to school. So,
did you ever get a notice from the draft board?
Yes, I did. I went in and signed up and got my 4F deferment and waved goodbye to a couple of my buddies that were waiting in line as well.
Oh, so. Boy. Yeah. Did they survive?
One of them did not.
Unfortunately. But. So now you get your certificate. I imagine you have to be a certified repair person in
right.
each state, you know.
Yep.
So you earn that through your education. So now, are you going to open your own shop, or are you going to go to work for a little company, a big company?
Well, I went to work for a local around Emmitsburg, Iowa. It was a hardware store that serviced and sold refrigerators. I didn't work there very long, maybe 6 months, and then I went to work for a company called Hoff Truck and Trailer down in Fort Dodge, Iowa, where they service refrigerated semi-trailers, and that's where I got introduced to Thermal King units, and I convinced them that I could fix anything. I was not a problem, you know. And they said, yeah, well, you're pretty cocky. You'll learn. So the next day I showed up there, the following Monday, and the lady came to the door, and she says, well, here's the keys to the service truck. Norm, who was the guy that was going to train me on this stuff, had a nervous breakdown over the weekend and was in the hospital, and she didn't know whenever he might come back. But she gave me a list of trailers that needed to be fixed, and I went out to the Iowa Beef Packer with the service truck, never even seen a Thermal King unit before, and started fixing them.
And so that led to Thermal King from there?
Yeah, so I did that for about a year, and I was repairing just about everything in there, but then the Iowa Beef Packers went on strike, so I had some time off, because that was the bulk of what I was doing. So I came up to the cities to go to school, and not being able to get into the school right away.
What school again?
The Thermal King school.
Oh, they Thermal King has their own private school.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was going to get in there, but then I had to wait 6 months because there was no opening. So I worked for a company called Snow Pony and ended up racing snowmobiles for a while. And
you were racing them?
Yeah.
What kind?
A Snow Pony.
Well,
they're out of Mendota Heights.
Yeah, that's we used to auction them off on the Big Kim Auction Man show back in '69.
Yeah.
Right in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Snow Pony. It's a little thing.
Yeah, a real small snowmobile.
Yeah.
And so then I got the invite to come back to Thermal King to go to the school. And
now, did you have to pay to go to school?
No, I did not. They would take you in. They would actually pay you a minimum wage while you're going to school so you could eat.
Well, do you have to pass a test?
Yeah, they give you some tests to pass. And when I took the test, then they... after looking at it for a bit, and I'm sitting there, a different guy came in and says, well, we'd like to offer you a job. And I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, do you have a good job right now or not? And I said, well, no, I don't. He said, well, do you want the job or not? Make up your mind. I said, well, okay, I'll take it. He said, well, you start on Monday. So.
And what job was that?
That was building prototype equipment in the model shop at in Bloomington at the Thermal King.
So, in other words, they're always striving and looking to make things more effective and less expensive?
Right. So every time you're designing a new piece of equipment, you would have to make model prototypes of it so that we could test it and make sure it worked and improve, you know, make the improvements on it.
Now, do they still have the rule in patent that you have to bring a working model in or present a working model, or is that I was somehow learning about how to get a patent, and back in the old days they had to make a miniature unit of whatever they're making to show how it works and all that. Mm-hmm. Now it's all schematics, or
yeah, now it's all drawings and write-ups. I've never had to submit a piece of equipment for a patent. So, but we would make them and we would test them. I've had things from full units that were patented to special receiver tanks that could work horizontally or vertically. Everything working all in one. So.
Now, do you get any recognition or bonus or your name on something to show that, you know, you were the inventor of this product?
Right. At Thermo King, they have a patent wall with all the patents all the way back from the starting on them. And every time you get a patent, you get a plaque on that wall. And once you've achieved 10 patents, you become what they call, they give the title of being a master inventor.
Wow.
And then you get invited out to some different dinners and things as appreciation for it, because very few people would have 10 patents.
So now you're close to 10.
I have 17.
Oh, so you got to go to the bow tie dinner?
But many times, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That had to be a good crowning achievement, a good feeling. 46 years, you must have one hell of a pension.
I have a very good pension. I got into it from the beginning and contributed to it.
So you're a big name up at Thermo King.
No, I'm not a big name.
Well, why not? I mean, you were an engineer. You have all these patents and all that.
Well, people know me, but, you know, there's a lot of people up there that make a big company like that run.
Of course, but did you ever have any young whippersnappers who knew everything?
Of course. I went back last year. I worked at Thermo King for 4 hours a week for 6 months, taking new engineers and helping teach them how to apply the knowledge that they learned in college to put into a product line and make it work. So,
wow, that's kind of a good feeling, isn't it, for being on the ground up?
Yeah, it's a good feeling. I really enjoyed it.
How old was Thermo King when you joined them?
They would have been, well, they started in 38.
Okay.
So I joined them in 69.
Okay, so 31 years old.
Yeah.
And you were there 46. So they've been around for quite a while.
Yeah, they've been around a long time.
Okay. But do you remember Thermo King sponsoring Indianapolis Motor?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I loved car racing and stock cars and stuff. I've never been to the Indy 500. I have been there for the Brickyard 400. But we have a racing room. The different rooms where you would have your meetings, they're all named after some. One is the education room stuff. Well, they have the racing room, too, is one of the meeting rooms in there. And they got pictures of the race cars from Indy and all the different things that Thermo King has sponsored over the years.
Have you been to Elko Speedway?
Many times, yeah.
How long ago?
Oh, last summer, yeah.
When did you start, though?
Well, I started going out there probably in the 60s. So.
Through the 70s? And
sure, yeah.
Well, I used to be the track announcer there.
Oh, very good. Well, my son worked out there for a little while. He was in high school, and he was cutting grass and stuff, and he had always waited to do the weed whipping along the fence out there when they would be practicing out on this track, because he wanted to be up there close to that.
Yeah.
And he did some racing out there as well. So.
But were you there during the Norm Setrin and is it Chabelski?
Yeah. There was There's several of those drivers.
So I was a track announcer out there, and KYMN Radio sponsored a car in every division. And sometimes in the late model, we had Mike Tuma,
yep,
number 82, who was track champion. Dwayne Behrens, before
right,
his untimely death, and he was track chairman. His dad, Larry Behrens, number 99, and Dwayne was 40, and 82 was Mike, and then Les Ferris, number 14, and the latest one would have been number 41, Reavers.
Yeah.
Schabowski. Is that Danny Schabowski?
Danny Schabowski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ford and the Chevy. Norm Sutton, Danny Schabowski.
Reavers is still running out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we got another connection.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy?
Are you, small world, ain't it?
Do you listen to KYMN Radio?
I hadn't been, but I have been, you know, lately. I never, out at my place, if I did a search on it, it never came up on my radio for
really?
Some reason. You couldn't dial it in. So I came in town here one time, and then I searched on it, found it, and then I locked it on a button, and now I can bring it in on it.
On FM or AM?
FM.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that AM should come in there.
Yeah, I guess I never tried it on the AM.
Our tower's almost in Randolph.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1080 on your AM dial. So that's pretty exciting. We have let's see if we had some more. We have some more connections. So did you have a place where you could tinker at home?
Sure. I have a big shop. It's like 28 by 44, and where I restored classic cars. I build all kinds of different equipment in there. I actually have a snow plow for my wheelchair. It's very difficult to shovel from those things, but they will push a lot of snow, so I can get out to the shop, clean off my sidewalks, and get in the Polaris and plow the snow with that. So.
Okay. When did you become more dependent on the wheelchair? Huh?
About 8-9 years ago, I started using
okay.
the wheelchair. Up okay. to that point, I was walking with crutches or canes. I had a very serious back operation about 36 years ago, and after that, I had a flat back, so I had to walk with a cane from then on.
Can you walk today at all?
I can walk probably about 50 feet, and then I'm pretty much done, you know, walking with a cane, a little
yeah.
farther with crutches. But
okay. Did you ever do that?
Not too much.
Right.
They want us not to overexert ourselves, because the more you work, the more you use the muscles with the post-polio, the faster they come down. So you're in a conserved
really?
Program. Yeah.
Just the opposite of what it should
opposite.
Be doing.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So, is there a polio foundation still? I mean, you mentioned the March of Dimes helped you, and do they still have a program, March of Dimes?
Well, the March of Dimes is still around.
Do they have, maybe it's March of Quarters now?
Well, I think they still call it the March of Dimes.
Okay.
But there's no polio around that I know of, other than some small groups of people that are post-polio survivors, and we get together just to talk about, you know, what medicine works for us, or what are you doing, and who's a good doctor. So,
do you take medication for polio?
The only thing I'm taking for that is Tylenol.
Oh,
yeah.
No prescription.
No, they don't okay. have any prescription for it, so.
It's 20 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, a friend you can count on. And I'm going to talk about a place called the Quarterback Club here in Northfield, Minnesota. It's locally owned, locally managed by Dale Finger, who bought it from his late boss, Larry Benjamin. And they are celebrating, well, they're not celebrating. He's a low-profile guy, Dale Finger. They've been in town for 50 years plus. And we're 50 years old on September 27th. And so, you know, hopefully we're going to have a big celebration. Well, I know we are. And, you know, I was thinking Dale should have had something going. But like I say, he's kind of a low-profile guy. My guest yesterday works with the YMCA. And he used to work at a car dealership, and he's a captain in the Minneapolis Aquitennial family. And I met him through that, and the first thing he said, oh, you know Dale Finger? Well, my wife actually met him. And my wife says, well, yeah, you know, roasted chicken and breakfast and just great food. Well, I told the guy I'd buy him lunch if he came down from the cities, because there's a, more of a connection with the Aquitennial and the defeat of Jesse James days. And so I told him all about the ribs, and he ordered some baby back barbecued ribs. And that's the most expensive thing on the menu. But he was nice. He only ordered a third of a rack instead of the whole rack. But any of you like ribs, you can get them for $18, $17.99. And, of course, you get the sides with that. And they are delicious. Quarterback Club, Highway 3 and 3rd Street, locally owned and locally managed. Once again, on the Wayne Eddy Affair, we have a gentleman named Bill Waldschmidt, and quite a career at Thermo King. Is that in Bloomington?
It's in Bloomington, yeah. Headquarters, yes.
Okay. And so as you were nearing a retirement age, then you got the four-hour week. After that, you trained in some young men. Were the people coming in as engineers, were they ready for the real world? Did you have to really work with them to...
You know, there's quite a bit of variation in different people. You know, we would have interns from the University of Minnesota come up, and normally I'd have one or two of them helping me during the summer while they were in there, and we'd give them projects, things to work on, and you know, and so we call them summer help. Well, some are help and some aren't, you know. But most of them were very good. I learned as much from them as I'm sure as they did from me, because every day when you, if you're up and you're paying attention, you know, you're learning stuff every day.
So. Have you? This is a question that maybe is out of your realm. I don't know. I don't know how you design air conditioning in a 40-story building. You know, I just imagine in the basement just one huge generator or whatever. Have you ever worked on something like that or just seen the design or helped design?
Yes. The system actually will be on the roof of the building, and you'll have huge compressors up there, 50-horsepower compressors and massive coils and fans to move the air throughout the building. The thing comes in when you have some rooms that are hotter than or cooler than other ones, and you have to balance all of that out. I haven't designed anything like that. I have a younger brother that works on an Owatonna, and that's what he works for, is a company down there where they build that kind of stuff. That would be Bob.
Okay.
But
does that fascinate you when you see a big building or flat buildings? Or I mean, do you think air conditioning when you're driving around and looking at various old buildings and stuff like that?
You know, a little bit, you know, but to do the refrigeration in the trucks or moving vehicles is much more difficult than to do a building, which is stationary. It's always going to be in the same place. You're always going to have the same heat or cooling loads. Where a trucker, he may be on the East Coast hauling frozen, and then he can be out in California hauling produce. And so there's a whole different set of programs that need to be adjusted. You know,
can the same guy do the same cross-country trip in the same,
sure.
Same trailer?
Same trailer, yeah. They just set the thermostat. The unit will take care of everything.
So the guy just pushes buttons.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, he doesn't have to know anything about it.
No, you can go up there with his gloves on and set the temperature.
Have you ever had one come in for a repair that had drugs in it?
Not for me, no.
Oh.
I've never.
Okay. at 27 minutes after 10 o'clock. It's a Tuesday morning, and it's June 19th, the year 2018, and we have rain falling right now. I closed my windows before I walked in the building thinking this might happen. So let's talk more about what you're up to now. You're retired, and you have your own shop, relatively big one, and you're near Randolph on how many acres?
Well, just 2.5 acres.
Oh, that just. A lot of people would love to have 2.5 acres.
Well, when I cut the grass, there's 150 trees to go around. So.
Wow. So you're in the woods, kind of?
Well, I planted all these trees, and most of them were windbreak, but now a lot of them are growing together, so I don't have to go in and out of all of them anymore, but I love living out in the country.
Yeah, I was thinking, if you ever want to know how old you're getting, is just look at those trees you planted, and you go, holy cow. Look at the size. I have two maples in my backyard, and I can't prove this, but I believe that the guy I bought the house from planted them far apart so he could hang a hammock between them.
Oh, so they're quite close together then.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, I have had to cut the lower limbs off several times, and I was looking up yesterday, and it's a canopy. I mean, there's two maples.
Yep.
Anyhow, that country living is great. So do you have a workshop there where people bring their wheelchairs and you can fix them? What is your program?
So I started out fixing chairs for myself for my own needs, and then I had somebody else needed a chair, so I fixed one up for them.
We have to remind people that may have just tuned in that we're talking about electric wheelchairs.
Electric power wheelchairs.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was buying a few for, you know, $300 or $400. That's all I would spend on them, because to put a set of batteries in a chair like this is going to be anywhere from, oh, probably $270 up to $450. And every chair, you know, needs two batteries in it, so they're quite expensive on the batteries on them.
Are they both being used at the same time?
Yes, it's a 24-volt system.
Oh, okay.
But I would bring chairs in, and I found people were throwing them away. They were going into the landfills, because if a chair doesn't work perfectly or something, or a good, reliable chair, nobody will accept them. So I started to fix them up, and then was donating them to people, anybody that needed one. My friends down in New Ulm, Minnesota, they're part of the Disabled Veterans of Minnesota. They now, a couple weeks ago, they brought me a whole van load of chairs and dropped off ones that they could not fix. And then I give them chairs that are repaired, and then they take them back and are distributing those to people of need.
How did they know about you?
The gentleman down there, one of the guys I knew down there, is my son-in-law's father.
Okay.
And so now it's kind of grown around to other people. There's a company up in Hopkins called Transtech. They take the real high-end chairs, and they set them up for people's special needs with head controls or laying out or oxygen, everything like that. So if some of these real high-end chairs, which are $40,000 and up, those chairs typically I take up to Transtech, and they set them up for people's special needs. So any part or money I put into it, the Disabled Veterans of Minnesota or Transtech now, they pay for all the batteries and parts for the ones that I'm repairing for them at this time, which is a huge help for me.
Is it connected with the VFW or American Legion or...?
Anybody that needs one would get one if they're a person of need. I've had a person call up and ran a business and heard that I was giving away chairs. Well, they wanted me to see how many chairs they could get, you know, and I said, well, I'm not giving them away to businesses, you know. You're making money on this. These are for people that can't afford.
You mean people that are in the business of renting chairs or whatever?
Yeah, well, they had some people in there. And their homes that maybe could use a chair.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But most of these places make quite good on their stuff on them. So I kind of turned them down, but I've had a lot of requests over the years from different people that, you know, do you have this chair or do you have one like that? And if I do have something and it's a person in need, we set them up, get them a chair, we take it to them. There's some group homes around that call me up if somebody passes away or can no longer drive their chair. Most of the time, those chairs end up going sitting in a garage for 6 months to a year till somebody says, you know, we got to get rid of this thing. Of course, then the batteries are all dead, and they're not going to spend $500-$600 to see if it still works. So they're just throwing them away. So I get those chairs, and I bring them in and work with them to make sure that they work and put new batteries in them and get them up so that's a good, reliable piece of equipment.
Why are those batteries so expensive?
They're a gel battery. They're quite large, quite heavy. And anything that has anything to do with medical is expensive.
Well, because it's a ripoff?
Well, sometimes I think they are a little ripoff. But those batteries are special designed for deep cycle for chair use. And you can actually take the chair on an airplane. You know, but I've never traveled.
Where would you put the chair?
They'll put it down in the cargo with the thing. They'll take you up, and you'll put you on a wheelchair, and a special wheelchair, which is narrow, and take you into the plane. And then they'll put your chair down below in the cargo area. And when you get to the other end, you can. They'll bring your chair up, and they'll have it waiting for you at the gate. The problem is if I wanted to fly to Florida or someplace like that, I can get on the plane, they'll take me down and everything, but when you get there, you can't rent a van that I can use.
Oh.
Handicap vans are, you know, terribly expensive, they don't have
them
out
there.
Well, what do you do? I drive. Anytime
a regular car?
I have a van, a couple of vans, one that I can pull my camper with.
Oh, you drive down there, you don't fly down.
Yeah, I drive down.
Okay. What about the license, driver's license?
I have a regular driver's license. Okay. I drive with hand controls.
You do? Yeah. Is that expensive to put in hand controls?
Well, hand controls are not that expensive themselves, but to get the van, like my van, the floor is lowered 10 inches so that I can come in without hitting my head on the door. And then the seat comes back, pivots around. I transfer from the chair into the seat, go back up behind the steering wheel. The ramp or the lift automatically comes in. The doors close, and you just drive.
No, do you shop for something like that, or do you have a van and have it outfitted?
Well, either way, I get my vans from a company called Rolex up in Shakopee, or Savage, and they're a very good company. They build the best equipment that I have found, and if I have an issue with it, they've been so supportive and helping to get it repaired and get it out there. They've been very good to me.
Yeah, I ran into somebody recently that had a new one, and I couldn't believe all the bells and whistles it had. And it had that ramp, lift you up,
yep.
Chair goes in, seat. Driver's seat turns around, you lift yourself onto the driver's seat, lock down the wheelchair or whatever, and then turn around, and then I had little hand things that, you know, stop, go.
Yep.
Yeah. And I ride a motorcycle, so same thing.
Very good.
You know, shift with your hands.
Yep. Yeah.
So in mine, I have an electric shift because I can't bend my foot to use the foot. Do you ever ride motorcycle?
Oh, I did. I did. I used to have a 1946, 45 Harley-Davidson flathead. Three-speed shift on the tank. Yeah.
Wow.
I rode motorcycles growing up.
Did you keep any?
I did not. Oh. Last one, I sold it for a down payment on a house. So.
Okay. What about you're a married man?
Yes.
And how many times?
Married one time.
Okay. Well, after all those grade schools and high schools, I understand. You're supposed to laugh at that. But so who did you marry?
My wife, Mary, from Prior Lake. We've been married 41 years.
Wow.
We have three children. We have five grandkids and two wonderful son-in-laws. And
So you were 29 when you got married?
28.
Yeah. And how old was she?
She was like 25.
Okay. So did you meet her at Thermo King?
No, we met at a party in Richfield. And okay.
Just a house party?
Just a house party. Some okay. friends.
Yeah. Did you dance?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, could you? Were you obviously a victim of polio back then?
Well, I don't know if I was obviously a victim of polio, but you know, everybody knew you had a bum leg, you know. So
okay,
but
so it was a love at first sight.
Well, we got along very well. Yeah,
big smile on his face
yeah.
right now.
Yeah, we're very close.
Okay, yeah. Did you have a big wedding?
We did have a big wedding. We rented the Park Ballroom down in New Prague,
yeah.
and I believe we had around 500 people at
wow.
the wedding.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Thermo King and a bunch of Thermo King people. Where did you meet her? At the party? But where did she work?
She worked at that time for B. Dalton Bookstores, which was owned by Dayton's, and she was one of their managers and helping bringing them into the computer age back then. Although
wow.
she not a real computer person, but she had a very good job, and was just she's
more like a merger.
Yeah, she's like the apple of my eye. She's yeah. a great person.
How many kids do you have?
Three kids.
And what are their names?
Well, Katie is my oldest.
Katie. Okay. Did she go to St. Catharines?
Actually, she got her master's at St. Kate's.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Katie at Katie.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after Katie?
And it was Anne.
Okay. And then?
And Daniel.
Daniel. How far apart are the kids?
The two girls are 2 years apart, and Daniel's 3 years younger.
Okay. Yeah. So the big girls took care of little Danny.
Yeah.
And provided Katie provided a babysitter for you when she got to be about 12 or 13.
Yep,
yeah. So where did you live at that point?
We lived north of Farmington on Pilot Knob Road. We had built a new house out there. And Katie was born the day before closing. So I had to bring all the people from the abstract place. We all had went up to the hospital because then you stayed for a couple of days, and my wife had to sign the papers up there at the hospital.
Okay. So that was the new track housing up there in Pilot Knob Road?
We had a new house built up on 182nd Street. They were individual homes up in there, and it was built by a builder. I think his name was Arnie Jorgensen back then.
How far apart were the homes?
Oh, we had good lots, about 5/8 of an acre, or okay. half acre lots back then.
Okay. Yeah. I have a 1 acre lot, which is nice.
Yes.
So now you're going to raise a family, and how long ago did you move to Randolph?
Be 17 years ago now this spring. We always wanted a little bigger place out in the country. When we first moved up to the top of that hill, there was hardly anybody up there.
Yeah.
A little blacktop road. And when we moved out, it was strip malls and stoplights, four-lane highways, and people coming from every direction onto us. So we moved out into the country. And
well, where did Katie go to school?
In Farmington. Yeah. All three of the kids went to school in Farmington.
Okay, so you lived there long enough for the kids to graduate.
Yep.
Then you go out and get this wonderful place in Randolph, and the kids are saying, Dad, Mom, why didn't you do this 20 years ago?
Well, we actually downsized. We had four bedrooms in Farmington when we went out there. Now we only have three bedrooms. But funny enough, that first summer we were out there, all three kids ran back home, one trying to save some money, and there were two of them, you know, in college and stuff, and another one all of a sudden had no place to live, so he went back home.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the way it is in America this morning? The 30-year-old, well, I'm not saying Dan or anything, but 30-year-old guys, women, living in the basement.
Yeah.
And, you know, take care of them. So did Katie get married?
Katie got married to a young man from Lakeville up there, and a great family. They have three kids, and two girls and a little boy.
Did you walk her down the aisle?
Oh, yes.
Okay, yeah. No yeah. problem?
No problem.
Okay, how about Ann?
Same way. I walked on out. She lives, now they live in Eagan, and she has two little girls, and her husband is a banker up in Woodbury.
Okay, how about Daniel?
Daniel had a bad accident about, 16, 17 years ago. And he lives in a group home in Apple Valley now. He has a traumatic brain injury.
Oh.
But I bring him home to my place just about every weekend. And he helps me in the garage. If I have a wheelchair that's not repairable or going to cost too much to fix it, I give it to him and he sits there and takes it all apart. I save the good parts and parts that are could be used on other chairs that I use to repair other chairs, and then frames get scrapped out.
So. Okay. Is he conversive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He is the nicest young gentleman you would ever like to talk your ear off.
Is he in a wheelchair?
No. He walks with a limp.
Okay.
He was partially paralyzed on the right side. He was in a coma for like 7.5 weeks.
Oh,
so he has a traumatic brain injury, but he's happy. He's a big, strong, strapping kid. He has some issues, but just a great kid, great guy.
Well, here's a test. Are you ready? This is a test. Name your grandchildren now, all of them.
Katie, Ellie, Lily, Beckett, and Claire.
Okay, you're doing good. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with our guest here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We're talking to Bill and Wald Schmidt is his last name, and we'll be back right after this.
Know, like me, Mark Quinnell, you know what to expect. That's why you should give State Farm Bank a try. A State Farm agent that helps protect your home, your car, and your family can help with your banking needs. It's more than just banking. It's banking with a good neighbor. State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Some products and services are not available in all areas. For information, call me, State Farm agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
We're sitting here talking about where's what and all that. I suggested from your home that you could see the KYMN radio tower. Now, one thing I noticed when I come into town on 47, there used to be one tower blinking, and that would have been WCAL on the St. Olaf campus. Then there were two, KYMN 1080 AM, out on the Cannon, by the Cannon River in Waterford Township. And now you got, I think I see like five or six when I'm coming, going west on 47. Because of the big turbines or the windmill,
right?
Those, and then of course the cell phone towers, and it's just like you say, you outgrew your place up there in Eagan or wherever you were, and now you're in this nice tuna half acres or whatever it is. So I'm sure you see our tower from there.
You know, I probably have and never realized which one it is.
I mean, you're across the river on Alta, and I'm sure.
So it's just straight north of there?
Yeah.
Now, I know where the
and west.
Yeah. I know where that red light is blinking up there. Yeah.
Yeah. 15 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, Bill Waldschmidt. You have this repair shop and then this giveaway program for electric wheelchairs. And you said that some can cost $40,000. And, you know, that's just unimaginable. I can't see an insurance company okaying that. What would be the minimal person would pay for wand-operated, what do you call it, toggle switch? Or
it's a joystick.
A joystick. What's the least amount brand new?
You might be able to get a real cheap, jazzy one for like
$3,500. $3,500,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does that mean, jazzy?
That's a brand.
Oh, Okay.
Yeah, they're just a real small. They, but they have kind of hard tires. They don't get very good traction. It wouldn't be something that if you were in a wheelchair and in that chair all day long that you would want to have.
Okay.
But I mean, they have their place for people that need it to get around, and I've had them in my shop and sent them out to people who have been very, very pleased, very happy with them.
Do you do any repair work on regular wheelchairs without motors?
No, I don't. I try to stay out of that because if you start taking wheelchairs, walkers, hospital beds, that people will donate a lot of different stuff, it would fill you up pretty fast. And then
can't you turn it around?
Well, it's hard to find. It's as hard to find people that need the chair and are needy and need the chair as it is to find somebody that wants to donate a chair. So if somebody has a chair sitting in their garage and stuff and hasn't been used, those are the kind of chairs that I like to get a hold of and bring them in, clean them up, and make them sure they all work. And then we find people of need that need a chair. So if you come across somebody that's needing a chair, and by all means, we will get them a chair.
What is needy?
They can't afford it. So if the insurance company would come out and say, okay, we'll buy you the chair, it's $40,000 for the chair, and you got to pay 20% of it. And by the way, that does not include the batteries because they're a consumable item. So some people don't have $8,000 to $10,000 to get them into the chair that they need.
Yeah. Hmm.
So even a chair like the one I'm using here, which is about an $8,000 chair, well, it would still cost you $2,000 out of your pocket to get into that chair.
Yeah. So let's say that there are people listening that fill the description that you made, and that is somebody unfortunately passed away that was using an electric chair, and it now occupies their garage. Batteries are dead, and it's dusty, and they're not knowledgeable, and they think it's a piece of junk. Bring it to you, and you'll decide if it's a piece of junk, and if it is, you'll take parts out of it for future installation, and and then
for repairing it. Yes, I will go to them and pick it up.
Oh,
because these chairs are quite heavy, 300 some pounds, and if you don't have a van or a ramp or a lift to load them, you know, you need a couple of really strong men to get it into a pickup and bring it out. But so I've gone as far as St. James, Minnesota. I've actually had two chairs shipped to me from far away as Pittsburgh. And they came to Yellow Freight up in Burnsville, and then I went up, picked them up, brought them out to my place, and uncratered them and fixed them up. So.
Wow. Do you are you a business?
I am not a business. I'm just an individual. I don't have nothing. I just something that I do in my garage.
Now, can you write off, let's say you had to buy a set of wheels, can you write that off on your, since you're going to give it away, would that be a donation to a nonprofit?
Well, I do not do anything that. It's just most of the parts that I put in it are used parts, although I have a chair right now which is a very expensive chair, and I just got it up on my lift and starting to look at it, and that chair has hardly any hours on it at all. And if that had a bad controller or bad motors on it, in which can easily cost several thousand dollars to repair, those bearings and wheels and tires and all those good things would all go into my inventory, which I would use on other chairs to fix them up.
Okay.
I do have several pictures with me on my phone that show all the different chairs, and a friend of mine gave me a table that's got a lift on it, so I made it wider and redid the wheels so it's stable, and now I can put my powered chairs onto that table and lift them up so I can work on them without having to get down on the floor.
Okay.
Which
okay.
has been a very thing. And Mike Peterson out here at Peterson Equipment's building me an aluminum ramp right now to put up onto that thing.
Are you talking about the Peterson out on 19?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great guy.
Nice people.
Great people.
Real nice
yeah.
people. I think I've had him on the air in the past. I'm trying to think of Larry's last name that lives out in Randolph, and he's an auctioneer. And
Volek.
No. But there is a Lawrence Volek that is from the Lonsdale area. Larry, anyhow, he used to work at the fabric place down in Faribault Woolen.
Yeah.
He's an auctioneer now. Isn't that crazy? Do you ever have that problem when you're trying to think of something like we were doing with Sherry?
Yep. Senior moments.
Yeah. I'll tell you. We're going to take another break. We're going to be back, and we're going to continue our conversation with our friend here this morning, Bill Waldschmidt, and we'll give you some telephone numbers or some email addresses if you or someone you know needs a wheelchair and are, in fact, unable to afford a brand new one. This may help because he donates these and he's associated with one particular group. We'll be right back.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. You know the name of this one?
Winchester Cathedral.
You got it. You're doing good. You can't name the band, though, can you?
I'd have to listen to it for a while.
Yeah. New vaudeville band. I remember when I first heard this song, I'm going, what is this guy singing through a tube or something? Here he goes. It is 7 before 11 on KYMN Radio. And before I forget, Bill, you are working with a veterans group somewhere?
The Disabled Veterans of Minnesota.
Okay, and that's statewide deal.
Right. Well, I've been working with the group out of New Ulm, but they have connections around the state, so
okay.
We find people that need it.
So these would be veterans of even the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, the
anybody
Middle
that
East.
Needs one.
Okay, that are veterans.
Right.
They look for veterans. Do you do any on your own?
I do. If a veteran, I've actually been on the other radio station down in New Prague on their trading post advertising if anybody needs one to get in contact with me. And then I asked for chairs as well, and I've had good responses going both ways.
So. Oh, good for you. So what we're going to do then at the end of here in another 4 minutes approximately is give all the information out. So right now, do you vacation?
Yes, yeah.
And where do you like to go on vacation?
We go to a lot of parks, a lot of state parks. I have a camper that I pull behind my wheelchair accessible van, my big van. And we take trips. We've actually camped all over the country. While the kids growing up, we had a tent trailer, and we would be at California, we'd be out on the East Coast. So camping has been something I've always loved to do.
Now, does Daniel ever go with you?
Oh, yeah. Always comes with us, and the girls and their husbands and children, they all have their own campers now. So
now, do you have Christmas at your house?
We do. We do. Or sometimes we have it at, like, a state park.
Oh, really?
Up to William O'Brien, they have cabins up there. This last year we went to that new Whitetail place in over by Farmington up there, which was a very nice place. We rented all three cabins, and all the kids come in. Everybody has their own cabin, and Daniel stays with Mary and I in our cabin.
Wow. Family that camps together, stays together?
Yeah. It's really good, yeah.
Wow, you lead a full life.
I love it. Yeah. Life has been very good to me. I've been very blessed.
And here you are, I was going to say, walking around, running around.
Rolling around.
Rolling around, there we go, in an electric wheelchair. And I'm going to watch you work that, and, you know, who knows. Maybe someday, you know, that'll come in handy. One last break, then the information, if you have one or need one, when it comes to being veterans, is it veterans only or
veterans
anybody?
Veterans or anybody of need.
Okay.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family-owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25-plus employees, and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service. And getting parts? Well, there's so much experience behind the parts counter, you'll be amazed. Our motto is, we sell fun. But every day, our mission is to help you from finding parts, getting service, or shopping for something new. And fun, too. Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
1876, Wanamingo Mutual has proudly offered fire, wind, auto, liability, and commercial insurance. Wanamingo Mutual Insurance Company would like to take this time to salute the area dairy farmers, their hard work, and the products they provide our families during National Dairy Month.
Number one in all of 1966. Name that tune.
Someone else, but not for
you. You got all the other ones. This is the number one song.
Oh, I know it. I know the tune, but I can't come up with a name now.
You know who's singing it?
It's the Beatles.
Here it comes.
Then I saw her face.
I'm a believer.
Yes.
Now I'm a believer.
The Monkey?
Yes. Okay. Boy, you done good. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, get your pens out, get your pencils out, get your piece of paper out, and if you or someone you know of need or veteran needs a wheelchair,
that power is wheelchair.
A power wheelchair, excuse me, electric, battery operated, this gentleman in front of me, Bill Waldschmidt, will accept any of them. And he'll pick them up, and he'll make them run if they don't run. And he'll find somebody that is in need of one that can't afford one, or perhaps a veteran. And he works with a group out of New Ulm that finds veterans that can use the electric chairs. So in this community, we have a lot of retirements, and they're for elderly people, and therefore perhaps... a wheelchair would be, like this, would be a great asset. And people pass away. Wheelchair can be 2 weeks old. And so let's give out the information on how to contact you in reference to an electric wheelchair.
So you can reach me on my email, which is Bill Waldschmidt, B-I-L-L-W-A-L-D, S-C-H-M-I-D-T at yahoo.com.
Okay, all one word? Bill.
All one word, no caps, no dashes, dots, okay. Nothing.
Okay, Bill Waldschmidt at yahoo.com. That's one way.
And my cell number is 651-621-0459.
Okay, and if you want to give him a call, he'll be off the air here in just a moment. And Bill Waldschmidt, 651-621-0459. Did you get it? 651-621-0459. Give him a call in a couple of minutes if you're in need of, or if you have one to donate. It will go to veterans and people of need. You're quite the guy, Bill Waldschmidt, doing that. It's got to be very fulfilling.
It is. I've had a lady send me back a picture of her giving her grandchild a ride on her lap, and just makes Life all worthwhile.
And I like the way you told me. I said, I will not park in a handicapped parking spot, so you can. I can park anywhere. Don't worry about it. You're very independent.
You kind of learn to be that way when you grow up with a disability or something.
Yeah. Well, keep that up for body strength, because you need that for the toilets. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay, Bill, thank you for stopping by our studios. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And that's, once again, Bill Walschmidt, and it's all one word, BILLWALDSCHMIDT at yahoo.com. Got Bill Walschmidt. Thank you. It is 11 o'clock, and once again, I'm going to tell you, you're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair. I should say you have been listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on the 95.1 KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, also 1080 on your AM dial.
95.1, the 1, revolutionizes radio with a playlist that lasts for days, not minutes.